Well, good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion. No, not our panel discussion. We did that an hour ago, for God's sakes. No,
it's
Jesse,
a small panel.
Yeah. Jesse Feiler is with us. He's our tech guru. He joins us this morning to discuss the power of entertainment, the power and entertainment value of gaming versus streaming services. How's that for a niche category? I like that. And now I have to say, Jesse Feiler, let me give his official introduction here. Jesse Feiler, before I give my introduction, Jesse Feiler is an app developer and author. His apps include Minutes Machine Plus, which helps you manage agendas and minutes for the Saranac River Trail app, and is launching its successor, Trails and Places, which lets you build location-based apps without writing code. That sounds fun. His apps are available in the Apple App Store, and it's always a great pleasure to welcome you to the program.
Here.
Now, we're basically going to talk, because you brought this to my attention, and as you were bringing it to my attention, I was reading this article, which I thought was interesting. And the article is a Washington Post article about how Fortnite is a bigger rival than HBO to Netflix. That's the point of the article, right?
That's the headline, and what is it they call the quote, the pull quote?
The pull quote, yeah. Fortnite boasts over 200 million registered users and some 80 million log in to play each month, according to the publisher, Epic Games. And so here's the pitch that Jesse sent me over the weekend, which was, should we talk about this and how entertainment is changing to involvement and creation by the entertainee? A word you proudly made up.
I hope so.
Okay.
Because if it's being used, it's icky.
Now, you have the article on your website, and if you go to our website, you can link to Jesse's, but it's a Washington Post article. It's by Brian Fung. It's fascinating because this business of video games is more than just playing the game, right?
Well, it's very much more than playing the game. And I put several links on the website to, and there's some, three of them by Kevin Anderton, who talks about the business of video games. And it's got lots of numbers and infographics, which, of course, I love. But he has dug up an interesting number. And the latest he has was the annual video game spending in the United States. The most recent year he has is 2016. Annual video game spending in the United States, $24.5 billion.
Wow.
If you would like to put that in perspective,
yes,
which I'm sure you...
It's one of the things we try to do here on this program.
I am looking at another number, $26.27 billion, and that's the revenue of publishers in the year 2016.
Wow.
It is marginally more than what's spent on video game. And one is what's spent, one is what the publisher gets. So the publisher number is really even a bit, should be higher to be totally comparable. But what we're spending on video games and the size of that market is almost as big as books, which is a reflection on both video games and books.
So that means like what we're doing, that's what we're doing instead of reading, right? Is that what I should take from that?
I think what's happening is reading. I want to talk more about video games, but this comparison is that what people are doing with their screens and with video games is more involving than reading. It's this thing we've been talking about for a long time of getting people into the story and controlling the story, making choices. You know, in the old days we used to say, or even in some kids' apps, they say, do you want to choose this road or that road or something? And then the story unfolds differently depending on which choice you make. And now with video games, the choices are so much more complex that you are actually writing your own story.
Now, because of that complexity, you're spending more time doing it, right? I mean, it's an incentive to spend more time at the game.
People are spending an enormous amount of time.
And one of the things that the fine folks at Apple have done is to send me a weekly reminder of just how long my screen time is each week, a figure that I quickly delete and don't look at, and keep on meaning just to turn it off because I don't really want to know.
Yeah, see, you're sort of what we in the as independent app developers would call a normal person. No offense meant.
No, none taken in this context.
Because I look at the screen time, and it means absolutely nothing to me, because screen time for me is largely work.
Well, that's what you're doing.
Yeah.
Sure, that's what you're doing.
So
and in many cases, that's sort of what I'm doing,
yeah,
too. But also, you know, I feel maybe this is a contrary attitude, but I feel that I'm an adult and I can figure out what is too much and too little. And I, you know, don't need to be scolded by my phone.
Yeah. And you can turn that off. You know?
Yeah. I have to get to that.
Also, it's the involvement. Well, I've been trying for a long time, unsuccessfully, to get people to think of things like stories and information as some abstract entity that's sort of out there and we can experience by reading it on a printed page, by reading it on a screen, by seeing it in movies and so forth. To me, it's the story or the data that is the most interesting thing and that I hope people are involved with, and the medium that they use to get to that, and whether it is one of these involving mediums like video games or a somewhat more passive medium like reading, to me that's separate from the story or the data. Does that make sense?
It does. So, I mean, going back to the Brian Fung article, if you're HBO, are you quaking or are you thinking, okay, we have to do something differently?
I'm not sure if either is true. They may have to. I think, first of all, those two questions: are we quaking? Are we worried about the future of our industry? If
yes.
I can rephrase that.
Yes.
And the related question: do we have to do something differently? I would expect that every morning at work, there's at least an informal meeting in Silicon Valley or in New York City, where a lot of this also happens, to decide, you know, is our business model falling apart or do we have to do something different? I think that's sort of not a once-in-a-decade discussion.
But one of the things that I thought of immediately when, as I was reading the article and we were, you and I were going back and forth on it, is that because it seems that it is a bit of an apples and oranges comparison, much like, okay, playing video games versus reading, or watching what Netflix has on and, say, Roma versus playing Fortnite. It seems as though those are two very different pursuits.
But what is similar to them in that, the way you describe it, is that both involve screens, interactions
right.
with screens. And that's where the similarity is, and it's a very big similarity because a few years ago we were talking about the next frontier for personal computers was going to be the living room.
Yes.
Did you notice that has happened?
Yeah, I guess so. Meaning
that's what we're talking about,
right? We're spending time, but it's in front of the screen.
It's the screen. The screen is saying what should we do,
right?
Which means that instead of looking at this is sort of really off the wall.
Sorry.
Am I allowed to?
Yeah. If not you, who?
Instead of looking at what many of us have a shelf or a stack of books to read.
Yeah.
You know, one day I'm going to read, you know.
One of these days I'll get to that.
Yeah. Of what to read now.
Yeah.
Instead of that, we're starting from the screen, and we're saying, what should I
consume?
Is
that the word?
I was going to say experience.
Oh, experience is a good word.
Yeah, but one of those, you know, take off the shelf of books, take the thesaurus down, and find, what shall I do that will pass my time, entertain me, or be useful with this screen?
And on the other side of that equation are the big companies looking at us sitting in our living room saying, how do we make money off them? Right?
Yeah. Well, this is that's the society that we live in.
Which I mean by that Fortnite figured out a way to do it that was revolutionary in some way.
Yeah. I'm not sure that it was all, from what I know, I don't think it was all that revolutionary. It was just done better.
Okay.
Or different.
They did a good job on it.
Yes.
But it changed. I mean, it brought so many people in, and has kept them in.
And that's where if anyone looks at the articles, these are from Forbes that I posted. You talk about bringing people in. When you think of video games and the people who are playing video games, what's your mental image? Who is that? Who's the typical gamer?
Like late teens, early 20s guys.
Okay. Here's a number that might interest you. Average gamer.
Yep.
You said what, late teens, early 20s?
Yeah.
35.
35.
Okay. And what was the other statistic you gave us?
Men.
Okay. Average gamer for men is 33. For women is 37.
Okay.
Women seem to be quite well represented in a lot of aspects of gaming, not totally. But if you look at the what we used to call want ads, job postings, you can see that people are definitely looking or talking about getting more women involved in gaming.
Which, and I guess when I use my understanding about Fortnite, is that's one of the things that has been able to do is to bring women and teens and girls into that world.
And how is that basically done? By making the setup for the video game and the story that unfolds as you interact with it have more women in it.
Right.
And be written more by women. And that's exactly the same strategy that is going on in other parts of the world, whether parts of society. Which is sort of, makes sense. You know, gets...
Yeah. Where have you been, 51% of the population? Oh, right here? We'll finally give you something to do.
Yeah, but when the screen is the center of it, and this is something... Now, this may be because my perspective is jaded because of the work that I do, but when you're looking at a screen, the choice is not... When you look at a bookshelf... Often it's which of these similar books should I read next?
Right.
Or maybe if you're in school, it might be, should I read the trigonometry book or the humorous book?
Oh, right.
There might be some book that is both, but I doubt it.
I doubt it.
No, I can't. Now you're going to get the calls from the mathematicians. But if you're starting from saying, okay, I'm sitting at the screen, what am I going to do now? My choices are, if the screen is the center, my choices now are, do I read the trigonometry book? Do I watch this movie? Do I play this game? Do I balance my bank account? And I'm doing all of it on the screen. So that's what has happened as... To use the terminology we were using, the screen has gone into the living room.
You know, years ago there was a Bruce Springsteen song, 57 channels and nothing on, meaning that you have too many, there's too much to choose from, and then eventually there's just so much, you know, there's 8,000 different types of soap, and you say, all right, I'm just going to get the thing that just says soap because I don't know what it is. Is there such a thing in what we're talking about of too much?
I would say it's not that it's too much, but you use the magic words in describing the situation, you said, is there something on?
Yeah.
And that goes back to what you were talking about before, or NPR, who was talking about cutting the cord?
Not me.
Okay, I think it was NPR.
Okay.
But that's okay. The idea that now that people are getting, are going, using streaming and are not looking to see what's on the TV network now, because that controls what you can watch. When what you can watch is whatever you choose to watch because you can stream it, and it doesn't matter what time it is.
Correct.
That makes your choice. The choice is not this constrained thing of what is on TV now. It's what is available to me now, which is a very different.
It's very different, but I find that to be intimidating in the sense of what can you watch? Well, anything you want, which isn't just like, okay, pick off the wine list. It's you can have whatever you want.
But you can also turn it around another way and say, oh, that looks like something that might interest me. And then you can watch that whenever you want. So it's not whatever you want.
Yeah.
You find what you might want and then watch it whenever you want.
Which is pretty cool.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
I think it's, and because I've noticed, I tend not to watch a great deal of TV because it has stuff like weather reports I don't believe in.
See, you made it down here without incident, all the way from Plattsburgh.
Yes.
At least I assume you made it without incident.
Yes. where was I?
Weather forecast. No, yeah, so you don't tend to watch a lot of networks.
Yeah, I don't tend to watch. But I read about a show, and I think a couple of people said, you know, there's a show you might like. And I sort of listened and say, oh, you know, okay. But there was something about either what I read or someone said to me, and I made a mental note of it. And I watch it, I would say, working my way through a season, I watch it maybe almost every day instead of watching the local news, which is...
Yeah.
Or the national news, which is the difficult one. And I really like it. And I like being able to sit down when I feel like it and watch it.
Am I allowed to ask what it is?
The Good Fight.
Oh, isn't that great?
Yeah.
It's really great.
So if someone recommended The Good Fight to you,
yeah,
and you said, I must watch it, when is it on? That's not
whenever
as easy for you to deal with.
The fact that you can watch CBS it whenever. CBS $10.
Oh, you have the deluxe one. I think it's a good enough show that I can get the one with a few commercials in it.
Jesse Feiler is our guest. You can see all of the articles that he has posted. He does wonderful work for us by going to his website, which is champlainarts.com. champlainarts.com. Jesse, it's always a pleasure and a great thrill to have you here. Thank you.
Thank you.